Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. I'm your host, Austin Peterson, and today is Monday, August the 4th. Can you believe it's already August? Man, this year is just flying by, isn't it, ladies and gentlemen? There's been a really exciting year, at least for me. This last week, I actually moved into a new domicile. I moved locations. I'm still in Alexandria, Virginia, but I moved to a little place called Del Rey. If you're not familiar with the D.C. area, it's pretty close to the Ronald Reagan Airport. I moved out of Old Town Alexandria into a beautiful apartment over here in Delray, and that's why I wasn't actually doing some shows in the last few weeks. If you listened to the last show that we did, that was my father who was on the podcast. He was in town helping me move, and I thought it'd be perfect timing to have him on the show. You know, he's a former Green Beret. And I took him, we did a little sightseeing, went to the Nationals game, which was really fun, and I took him to his favorite monument in D.C. I guess it's hard to say it's his favorite, but it's the one that he always likes to go and see the most, the Vietnam Veterans Wall, the Wall. He goes there because there's a couple of his buddies from high school that their names are inscribed on the plaque. And it's always very touching for me and for him to go there together because he can't help but tear up and remember his friends, the stories of what their lives were like when they were young and innocent before the war sort of tore this country apart. And it really has a strong impact on him and for me, and it just actually just reminds me the depth of the struggle that we are engaged in. We libertarians, if you consider yourself a freedom fighter or someone like myself, then, you know, the push to avoid war, the push to try and stop more wars like that from happening, it has a sense of urgency when you stand there in front of that wall. And I always feel like I need to give the respect to those soldiers who gave their lives in a conflict that even my father, you know, who is a little bit more of a hawkish Republican, he just sees it as useless because what did it accomplish? And if for me, it just strengthens my resolve to continue spreading the ideas of limited government and personal responsibility, personal liberty, economic freedom, because ultimately I do believe that these concepts will lead to more, less war. Not that there'll ever be no wars. I'm not a utopian, but I just think that there will be less wars because more prosperity means more people are invested, and the more people are invested, the less they want their stuff to get destroyed and broken. And that's the most basic way that I can explain that concept. But I want to talk about something today that might surprise you. It's a topic that might surprise you, especially considering my background. There was a conference, a Liberty conference, but not just any Liberty Conference. And no, this isn't the Young Americans for Liberty Conference, which happened in D.C. this last weekend, although I heard it was very exciting. This is a Libertarian Christians Conference. And this is a story that came from the Pan Am Post. Really interesting story. Libertarian Christians converge and challenge statism as a faux religion. And this is by Guillermo Jimenez, who wrote this, just came out this morning. And I'm going to read from this a little bit, and I'd like to talk about it. And, you know, just to give you a fully informed idea of where I'm coming from, I am a secularist, so I believe, I don't believe in a higher power. But I am not, I'm not a statist. I don't believe in big government. And so, you know, even though they may be attacking secularists in some ways, perhaps, they are mostly attacking the secularists of the Democratic, the left wing, the sort of the big government status, you know, the Bill Nyes of the world, the ones who believe in big government. What's his name? Neil deGrasse Tyson, who says that, yes, government must lead when it comes to space travel. Anyways, let me read from the article and then let's discuss this topic because I think it's important for these kinds of conferences to happen because I think that statists atheists are a big problem. I sometimes like to joke and call them statheists. I think they are a problem. But I also think that statist Christians are a big problem, and I think that they get a lot of flack from atheists, statists, and it's time for us to have a meaningful dialogue about religion, and I think it needs to happen. In the community, obviously, it needs to happen across many faiths. You know, we should be talking to Islamists, we should be talking to Buddhists, we should be talking to people of lots of religions. But I think that most of all, atheists and Christians need to have this kind of a dialogue, this kind of political dialogue. Because I think that the coalitions that we are going to build, at least in the short-term future, and hopefully in the long-term future, the coalitions that we can build will have to be cross-faith denomination, cross-faith, no faith to no faith coalitions to build a more libertarian republic. And you remember, there are lots of atheist capitalists, you know, the Randians, the Objectivists, you know, the Ayn Rand group of people. Those are people who are very open about their secularism, and these are people who I certainly identify with. I'm not a hardcore objectivist in so many ways, but I do think that they have a lot of good points. But the libertarian Christians, I think, are a very important movement that should be encouraged, because they will take their brothers and sisters in Christ towards a more free market direction, a less militant direction. And even though I'm not a militant atheist, I'm a hardcore atheist, but I'm not a militant atheist. I think, and we'll discuss what I think will be the good intersection later on in the show, and where there's room for real conflict that needs to be addressed, and where there's room for agreement, and there should be coalitions. But let me read from the article. The first ever Christians for Liberty conference took place on Saturday, and it brought together over 100 varied individuals, men and women, young and old, united in their Christian faith and libertarian political philosophy. LibertarianChristians.com, sponsored in part by Students for Liberty, hosted the event at St. Edward's University in Austin, Texas. According to Norman Horn, the lead organizer and founder, people came from all over the country, along with at least one visitor from abroad. He says, for a one-year conference, this is pretty good, especially running on a shoestring budget and counting on word of mouth. The conference hosted a wide range of speakers, included Michael Meharry, who's a national communications director for the 10th Amendment Center, David Theroux, founder and president of the Independent Institute, Jay Hall, a member of LEAP, that's the Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, a Texas state representative, David Simpson, and Alexander McCobin, Students for Liberty, among others. So that's a pretty good lineup of speakers. And basically, this guy, Guillermo, goes on to describe what is a libertarian Christian. He says, many see libertarian political philosophy as a rejection of all forms of authority over the individual. LCC, both through its website and its first live gathering, has sought to demonstrate how the ideas of liberty and the Christian faith go hand in hand. And according to a statement on their website, Christian libertarians believe that libertarianism is the only political philosophy that is truly consistent, that makes any rational or moral sense at all, and that agrees with what we understand in the Bible and Christian history. Norman Horn elaborated, saying, statism is against the kingdom of God and is not in the natural order of things as God has planned. And on the question of whether libertarianism and Christianity are truly compatible, Horn added, it's been Christians for hundreds of years who have been some of the staunchest proponents of individual liberty and the restriction of governmental power. A large part of what the CFL conference attempted to accomplish, he explained, was to show libertarians that Christianity can be and has always been a great supporter of individual liberty and an opponent of state power. Well, I do have some disagreements with them on some of those statements, but obviously I think that people ought to be allowed to believe what they want to believe. I'd like to break down this first one, where the statement was that Christian libertarians believe libertarianism is the only political philosophy that's truly consistent. Well, that's not necessarily true. I mean, it's not the only political philosophy that's truly consistent. He says, makes any moral or rational sense. I mean, obviously that's offensive to people who don't agree with their belief system, but you know, everybody gets to believe what they want to believe. I think what really is the heart of the matter is that, to me, a libertarian Christian, or you know, a libertarian Muslim, or a libertarian Buddhist, or a libertarian atheist, you know, anyone who sort of precedes their philosophy with libertarian, it's fine with me. And the reason is because that means that they aren't going to force their philosophy on me. Now, they can believe that their philosophy is superior. Everybody does. I think mine is superior. You know, I'm a secularist, you know, libertarian secularist, and I, you know, believe in science, and I don't believe in God or creation. But, and obviously I believe this for reasons that I could elaborate, but I don't want to bore you guys. But I'd just like to say that if you have the libertarian label preceding whatever your other philosophy is, then that just really means that you're not going to force it on me. You know, think about this, like a libertarian socialist. That may sound like a oxymoron in terms, but some libertarian socialists, the true definition of a libertarian socialist is someone who may want to create a voluntary socialist community, meaning that they all choose to live there, they all choose to divide their resources up equally and do so, and they certainly should be able to do so if they desire, without having anyone interfering on them and their processes. You can't force people not to be socialist if they want to. That's certainly their right, as long as they don't force it on everyone else. So a libertarian Christian, to me, is someone who believes in the teachings of Christ, but they don't want to force those teachings on someone else. So that's someone that I can get along with. You know, we've sort of have in this country a strong atheist movement that at first I heartily embraced, and I still sort of do. But it's starting to evolve. That movement is starting to evolve. And I'd like to be a part of the evolution of that movement, because what I think is a necessary, hostility against theocratic leanings of some of the political leaders in this country has become less of a need for hostility and more of a need for togetherness. And I say this because although I do think that Christianity and certain religions and theocrats, and they need to be challenged from a secularist perspective, the libertarian Christian movement shows to me that there is a softening of the rhetoric, that there is a group of people who they say, you know, hey, if we force our beliefs on other people, well, when we're not in power, they're going to force our beliefs on us. And you see that in Europe, you know, in France, you know, they're being overtaken by, you know, the Muslims who are, you know, they go and they riot in the streets when there's this conflict in Israel and between Israel and Gaza. And they're, you know, they're sort of forcing the Muslim religion out in a sense by, you know, banning burqas and instituting all of these rules against the, you know, how the Muslims want to live their daily lives. And you can't do that here in the United States, luckily, because we have a First Amendment. And so I think that what happens is that when you allow people the freedom to choose to be how they want to be, well, then you get that back. It's the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And that's a Christian philosophy. So the Christians who follow that philosophy, I believe, should be encouraged and supported. And the reason I do that is not because I agree with them, but because I, you know, fundamentally on their philosophy, but because I know that their philosophy is benign and it does no harm to me. It neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg, as Thomas Jefferson would say. So let me go on and talk about the topic that I think is even more interesting, because I don't want to get into an argument about how they say, you know, they're talking about, they see libertarian political philosophy as a rejection of all forms of authority. Well, you know, obviously Christians don't believe in earthly authority. They believe in, you know, authority from God, which, you know, again, that's something that I would reject. But again, to each his own. So the next section, which is really interesting, they're talking about the religion of statism. Among the presenters, Jason Rink of the Foundation for a Free Society hosted a provocative talk titled American Idol: How the State Attempts to Replace God. Rink is a self-described born-again Christian who became interested in libertarianism following Ron Paul's campaign for president in 2007. He said that while in his spiritual life he remains a disciple of Jesus, politically he's become a, quote, disciple of Paul, which is, you know, he's talking about Ron Paul, which is kind of funny. And he says, one of the issues that we have when we're trying to enter this discussion is understanding that many people are unaware of the kind of allegiance and the way that they look to the state as a replacement for God. Government seeks to embody and replace some of the characteristics of God and take them on for themselves, Rink explained. Rink specified that the state has taken on the role of provider and healer through its many welfare and healthcare programs. As such, most of the public viewed as omnipotent, omnipresent, good, just, and holy. And that's true. I mean, there have been evangelists who have been fined. We've covered this at the Libertarian Republic. Evangelists who have been fined for feeding the homeless because the government has decreed in certain counties of the United States that it's a crime to feed homeless people. You know, in one place in Pensacola, Florida, for a short time, there was a ban on homeless people having blankets. This is all a sort of push by the state to control what form of charity can be done. You know, before we had welfare in this country, most of the charities that existed were religious charities. And I think that's much better, you know, even though I'm not religious. You know, there are, you know, secular charities, by the way. But most of the charity that was done by the Catholic Church. It was done by the religious. And I think that that's fantastic, you know, and probably a lot of statheists, you know, statist atheists would disagree with me. They're like, well, when I need charity, why should I have to go to a church? You know, like, well, you know, why should you have to go to the government? Because the government has to take it, tax it from me first in order for you to get that charity. And first of all, you don't have a right to charity. Charity is something that's given freely. If it's taken from me, it's not really charity. Remember, the government doesn't do charity. It has to break somebody else's leg before it can go and take the money to go and heal somebody else's leg. But not so with the Catholic Church, where the money is given freely, or other charities, you know, there's lots of evangelical charities that exist out there, and they do missionary work, good missionary work. I remember we gave to the Lottie Moon Foundation quite a bit in my Baptist church where I grew up in Missouri. But the type of charity work that is done by the state, again, it's not charity work as it's typically defined. And so I think that the Christian libertarians here are making really good points where they're talking about the state basically taking on the role of provider and healer, which, you know, if you don't trust the government, it's the most terrifying idea that you could ever have. And Jason Rink goes on to say, no matter how absurd laws may be, they are to be obeyed at all costs, Rink says. Too many people mistakenly view the state as, quote, eternal, and the notion that the state, quote, has always existed and will always exist makes the idea that we can move towards a voluntary or stateless society inconceivable. It's as if they believe that John 1:1 says, in the beginning was the state, and the state was with God, and the state was God. Well, that's a very interesting notion. I think there are a lot of people who just sort of believe government as eternal. There was a famous MSNBC host who said, you know, government is the only thing that we all belong to. Well, we don't belong to the government, just so you know. And remember, we have to make a plan for a day that we may not have a government. And, you know, hopefully that day will come soon. But, don't get me excited. But the idea that that Democrats, leftists, you know, statheists, these people replace the idea of God with government is true, I think, in many respects. They believe, you know, government as the one eternal thing that we all sort of belong to. And, you know, Christians have to reject that because of their own faith. And obviously, I have to reject the Christian viewpoint on this because I don't replace it with anything. There's actually a really famous quote that I use on one of my non-religious. It's called the non-religious right. And it's this old quote from Spanish anarchists who it says, no gods or kings, only man. And they use that in the famous video game BioShock as well to sort of poke fun at the objectivists, the Ayn Rand style atheists. But I have to agree that the criticism of the left here and say that Jason Rink makes a really good point where he is showing that these people sort of, they view the state as omnipotent, all-powerful. And when you have a government that's so enormous and does so much, as our current big government does right now, it's easy to see why people would believe that. Now listen, here Rink goes on to say that the United States, the government has taken on all the trappings of a modern organized religion. He pointed to the sacred symbols and texts that have taken the form of flags and constitutions, former presidents looked upon as saints, congressional buildings as temples, government schools as churches, and the Pledge of Allegiance as a common prayer. Well, he makes a very good point here. I think that Rink is probably a bit of an anarchist in what he says, you know, and, you know, more power to him. I do like my anarcho-capitalist friends. I disagree with him on quite a bit. I do think that he makes a very good point here with the problem of flags and constitutions. I'm a constitutionalist. I consider myself a limited government constitutionalist type. And, you know, when he's talking about former presidents looked upon as saints, that's a really true statement, because everybody likes to look back and say, you know, here's the best thing. If you look at the White House website, right, if you go to whitehouse.gov, they have the history of all the presidents. They were all great. Every single one of them. They were all saints, great presidents, every one of them, right? So the White House is obviously going to believe that. I think that Jason Rink here is he's maybe pushing it to make a point here, where he talks about government schools as, quote, churches. And, you know, I don't know that they go to church, to school, to worship the state. Certainly I went to a pretty good public school. And the Pledge of Allegiance is a common prayer. Well, that's true. And we won't get into where the pledge came from, because if you're a regular listener to the Freedom Report, you know a dang Christian socialist wrote that BS thing. Anyway, so moving on, Jackson Trigg, who traveled from Albuquerque, New Mexico, agreed with Rink's assessment. He believes the church itself is partly to blame for this phenomenon, as it feeds into, quote, the religion of statism. As a Canadian originally, he was disturbed to find out how much the Christian church in the United States is wrapped up in nationalism, and that is very true. If you go to church on a 4th of July service, he said, you know they're going to talk about America and try to tie it back to God somehow. Trigg recounted the times he visited Christian youth camps and was troubled by the requirement to raise the U.S. flag every morning and pledge allegiance. What does America have to do with Christianity, he questioned. The events organized... Before I continue, I think that's a really good point. You know, I went to quite a few Christian camps when I was a kid, and certainly in my church services growing up, there was a bit of nationalism, you know, the American flag that was hoisted, and I think we did the Pledge of Allegiance a few times in church, which, I'm not a big fan of when I think about it. You know, I think it's mostly benign, I think, for the most part, like, just like I think libertarian Christianism is mostly benign. But I think that it is something that you should question, because when you think about it, what really does religion and the state have to do with anything? I think if you're trying to say, you know, well, we need to pray for our country and we need to pray for the citizens of this country, that's a good sentiment. I think that's ultimately a good sentiment. But I do get wary when I see too much of a mixing of religion and state. And certainly the Pledge of Allegiance is something that, you know, you have to take very seriously, a pledge. A pledge is something that you give, and it shouldn't be taken lightly, which is why I think it's kind of wrong to ask children to do it. Because what are you really asking a child to pledge allegiance to something that they don't even really understand? You know, you want to tell them that one day that they should sign up for the military service, they should sign up for the draft one day. Well, you know, give the kids a break, you know, like, don't indoctrinate them. But unfortunately, that's the kind of claim that you could level against. You could say the same thing for bringing a child to church, you know, don't indoctrinate them, give them a chance to learn. So that's a bit of a problem there that libertarian Christians might have to address. But this isn't about that. Let's talk about mixing politics and faith. This is what I just segued to anyway. So this is from Guillermo. As for the challenges in recognizing one's political and social and spiritual life, this has been a journey for several years in the making by this guy named Trigg that I was just quoting. And he says, for the last 2 years of my life, I've been trying to look at all the different places where on the face, it looks like your perspectives in life clash, but then realizing that they are and can be harmonized in your mind. He added that he has learned his libertarian political views and his Christian faith not only work together, but also, in a sense, flow from each other. I like that. Trigg mentioned that while cognitive dissonance between the political and spiritual has met harmony in his own mind, the social component involved has itself been a challenge to overcome. To the Christians, you're this outsider. And to libertarians, you're this religious geek, but you have something to give to both. And I agree with him on that. I'm sure that Christians probably do sort of see libertarian Christians as a bit of an outsider. They're probably a little bit more accepted in the church than they are actually from amongst libertarians, which we have a very strong, very vocal secular component of the libertarian movement. And, you know, again, I'm certainly a part of that, and I support that. But again, we can't run off our religious friends who want to come to this philosophy and square it with their own beliefs, which I think people should be allowed to do, and they should be encouraged in doing so. Because I think more than anything, liberty is more important than our religious beliefs, because without liberty, we couldn't have our religious beliefs. And the founder and editor of the website, libertarianchristians.com, had some of the same feelings. He says, "I do feel, in many respects, that Christian libertarians are certainly an underrepresented voice, and I think in many cases they're just too nervous to speak out. I felt that if I were to out myself as a libertarian, that could come with social repercussions." And I totally agree. And I think that's because of the wave of atheism that has swept across the United States. The libertarian Christians have sort of been swept up into that because there's been a lot of criticism, and I believe, you know, well-founded criticism of religion and church and state issues. You know, people who want to, people who really do, like Rick Santorum, or perhaps the guy who wants to have the Ten Commandments on the in the government building there in Oklahoma. These are people who needed to be resisted, and libertarian Christians probably feel like they got the backlash from the secular resistance to the mixing of church and state. And so they probably, when they speak up on their beliefs, there's probably a knee-jerk response from my fellow secularists towards them, worrying that they are trying to push a theocracy. But I think that people really need to listen to these people. I think we really need to hear more from these libertarian Christians. You know, my former employee, Ian Hewitt, who was a frequent guest on this podcast, he's a strong Christian. He's a very conservative libertarian Christian, and we always had a lot of great agreements we talked about on this podcast, because we share fundamentally the belief that we should be able to believe whatever we want. And so I really like the idea of a more accepting libertarian movement that brings in these libertarian Christians, because where they go, I think the other Christians will follow. We want more Christians to become libertarians. And that's because I think that the influence that obviously that the Christian movement has would be a tremendously powerful influence on the libertarian movement. Now, some people fear that, I think. They fear it because they say, oh, well, they're pro-life, you know, and they're going to try and ban abortion and blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, I'm an atheist and I'm pro-life. And I do that for not just moral reasons, but I think for logical reasons. And but that doesn't mean that I want the government actually to be involved, and we'll have an abortion debate at a later time. But I think that what's happened is that when, you know, Norman Horn is here talking about the fact that if there could be social repercussions, he's true about that. And I think he's right. And he's basically worrying about the backlash from, you know, secularists, and not just the statheists, not just the people who are sort of against religion and want to replace it with God, but from atheists such as myself, who for a long time, while we were sort of fired up on the rhetoric of Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris, and as we've sort of come out of the closet as atheists in the last decade, I think that there's been a sort of knee-jerk response to any Christian who speaks out from their beliefs, because we've been pushing back against the forces of theocracy, and rightly so. But I'd like to argue for a kinder, gentler atheism. And I think it's necessary once we get through the radicalism. It's just like feminism, you know, it was needed for a time and it needed to evolve. And I think that atheism and secularism needs to evolve, because we all have to live together on this planet. And I don't believe that we're ever going to totally eradicate religion. I think that there are a lot of logical reasons why people arrive at the conclusion to why there is a God. But I just don't share those beliefs. I didn't reason myself into those positions. I reasoned myself out of them. But I do think that it's very important for us to, as secularists, to reach out to libertarian Christians and encourage them and to build these kinds of coalitions. Because here's the thing, they're the majority anyway. The Christians are the majority. And so you're never going to get anywhere by bashing your head, you know, against a rock. You're going to have to give a little bit. Remember, if the hurricane is blowing the tree and the tree doesn't bend, the tree will break. And I say this as a tree. And I think it's important that we sort of give a bit in order for us to live, to survive. We need to, if we want to expand the ideas of logic and reason and free markets, secularism, then we're going to have to make friends with these libertarian Christians. And I think we're going to have to encourage them and be very careful about the type of knee-jerk reactions that we might have. Make sure that you listen first. Be a good listener. And I would go to these libertarian Christian conferences, not to confront, but I would go to these conferences to hear what they have to say and to be a good listener, because then you can learn and then you can understand someone that you may say you disagree with even more. Because, again, even if your goal is to confront them later, then you're going to have to hone your arguments. And what I really think happens is that you find you have much more in common with your opponents sometimes, or your perceived opponents, than you may think. Norman Horn says, "To the Christians who accept that Jesus Christ is the Prince of Peace and that he gave us a new and better way of life to follow, then where does violence and force fit into that? We begin to see that these things are incompatible with our beliefs. This understanding of the use of force in society leads us to libertarianism," Horn continued. Well, don't forget that Jesus did use a little bit of force against the money changers there, so you gotta understand, try and jive that, guys. You'll have to answer that question. That'll be a tough one. I'll throw that challenge out to my libertarian Christian friends. And the founder of Libertarian Christians concluded, he doesn't think it's proper to suggest that, quote, Jesus was a libertarian or, quote, God was a libertarian. He does, however, believe it is proper to say libertarianism is the most consistent expression of Christian political thought that we have. Now, that's very intellectually honest. Norman Horn saying that Jesus was not saying that Jesus was a libertarian or God was a libertarian. And he doesn't expand on that, on why he believes that. That actually is, to me, probably the most interesting statement that he makes, because I think a lot of libertarian Christians will say, oh, well, you know, God was a libertarian or Jesus is a libertarian. I really don't think that's true. And again, if you're a Christian libertarian listening to this, allow me just a moment of listening to me before you get angry or turn off this podcast. The reason why is because you don't have a choice with salvation. You know, you'll disagree, because, and Ian would always disagree. He'll say, well, you have a choice. You can accept it or you can die. Well, okay. You know, if I put a gun to your head and say, you know, accept me as your savior or I'll pull the trigger, you know, in this scenario, pulling trigger is going to hell. Yeah, you've got a choice, but not really. So I think that Norman Horn is being philosophically consistent here when he says that Jesus is not a libertarian, God is not a libertarian. The idea is that the authority is not here on earth, the authority is in heaven, which, since I don't believe in it anyway, it neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg. So, but at least he's being intellectually honest in saying God is not a libertarian. Because, again, we don't have a choice. If he is the God, if he is omnipotent, then you must accept him or you will die. And, you know, the problem for me comes from the idea, the riddle of Epicurus, you know, whence cometh evil? And I'd like to read this to you, and I know that it's my podcast, so I get the last word. The libertarian Christians are just going to have to deal with it. But the problem of evil, to me, is really the reason, one of the major reasons why I don't believe in God. So I want to leave you with the riddle of Epicurus. This is a throw out of challenge to my libertarian Christian friends. And the question is that if God exists, then where does evil come from? I want my libertarian Christian friends to try and answer this question without using the term free will. Okay? See if you can do this, and then we'll go. Is God willing to prevent evil, but not able? Then he is not omnipotent. Is he able, but not willing? Then he is malevolent. Is he both able and willing? Then whence cometh evil? Is he neither able nor willing? Then why call him God? All right, now I'm just teasing you guys. See if you can answer that question. I'd love to hear what you guys think about this. Did you enjoy the show? What do you think about this topic? Do atheists and Christian libertarians need to get together and work harder together to try and build coalitions so that we can have a more free market United States, that we can have a more free country and a more free world? What do you guys think about this topic? Send me an email. I want to hear what you think. And what do you guys think about the show? Are you enjoying the podcast? Are there any guests that you think I should bring on? Just send me an email. Go to libertarianrepublic.com. Tell me what you think about the show. Tell me what you think I should talk about. And send me some guest suggestions. And if you got a challenge you want to throw down to your buddy Leif Beaverson here, just throw out some challenges. I like to read questions from and statements from my readers on the show. So send me your feedback. Go to libertarianrepublic.com. Go to fill out the form on the right-hand side that says send us a tip. Send me an email. I'd love to hear from you guys. And as always, thank you very much for listening to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty, the Freedom Report, only at libertarianrepublic.com.